Nation, there's so many reasons out there to start taking notes on the Rocketbook. I'll list a few. One, it's a reusable notebook. When you've finished with your notes and you've scanned them into their app, you can simply just moisten the page and then wipe off with a microfiber, and you can reuse that page over and over again. The best feature about the Rocketbook is you can search your notes. You will never lose a note again, which means you don't have to go back and do the valuable work you've already done because you can't find it. It is absolutely one of my favorite tools. Go to our affiliate link, scalinguph2o.com/rocketbook, to take 15% off your first order of $20 or more and never lose a note again. Welcome to the Scaling Up H2O podcast. My name is Trace Blackmore, the host of the favorite water treatment podcast out there. Nation, I love getting your requests for what shows you like to hear, what guests you want me to interview, what topics you want me to uncover. So the great team here at the Scaling Up H2O podcast has made that even easier for you to get the information that you have in your head to us so we can make that show that you want us to make. Now, I've always told people you can go to our page, scalinguph2o.com, go over to our show ideas area, and you can navigate that way. However, if you just want to type in scalinguph2o.com/show idea, that's show idea, S-H-O-W-I-D-E-A, a form will pop up and you can tell us whatever you like. Nation, this is how we make sure that we have thousands of shows to come. So as I always say, don't keep that information to yourself. Keep that information coming to us, and we will make sure that we deliver the best industrial water treatment podcast on the air today. Nation, as you know, one of my favorite things to do is host this podcast. And through hosting this podcast, I get to meet so many of you when I go to different functions. That's something that I love to do, and it's something that I love to promote because I know when you know what's coming up, you are able to enhance your career. You are able to enhance your network. You're able to learn more. And it's just exciting and fun. And I know this job can be a little bit mundane when we're driving from account to account. Sometimes we speak to very few people. Maybe we don't see all the people we need to at the plant. So we do all of our work and then we got to drive to the next plant. I know how important it is to talk about our day with people that understand our day. So I just want to talk about a few things that are going on in the industry to get you to collaborate and work with other people within the industry. The first thing I'm going to mention is March 22nd. It is World Water Day. And World Water Day is a day that celebrates water and inspires action to tackle the global water crisis. Now, World Water Day has been around for a while. We celebrate it each and every year, but there is a mission around World Water Day, and it is Sustainable Development Goal 6, which reads Water and Sanitation for All by 2030. Just imagine everybody on this planet has clean, drinkable water, sanitation included, by 2030. That's within our lifetime. That's a few years away. And the only way we're going to get there is to bring an awareness. And who better to bring that awareness than the Scaling Up Nation? We are involved with water each and every day. So, Nation, what a great thing to celebrate World Water Day. We're going to have information if you want to learn more about World Water Day on our webpage and all the things that you can do to help bring awareness so we can get water and sanitation to everyone that resides on planet Earth by 2030. Now, one of the things that we do each and every year is we talk about the Global 6K. This is put on by Team World Vision, and it's being held on May 18th. Nation, we've had several shows where we talked about this, but the whole purpose of this is to bring awareness to the world water crisis and to get water and sanitation to all by 2030. So just by participating in the Global 6K, you're going to start bringing an awareness to people around you. And for all of us that are in the industrial water treatment industry, it allows us to work with each other in a way that is different and fun so we can celebrate that we are all working with water. Now, why is it a 6K and not a 5K? Well, the average person that does not have access to clean drinking water has to walk 6 kilometers on average. Now, this creates a huge problem because that's a long distance, which means normally kids are going out and getting and bringing back this water, which means they aren't in school. It means they have to travel down roads, which puts them in potential danger. And there are all sorts of stories of human trafficking. So just simply by getting clean drinking water to where they are, it changes everything. They're now able to go to school. They're now able to concentrate on things that are within their community instead of walking 6 kilometers a day to go get water that most of us would never even consider drinking. Nation, it is a great cause, and it's a great way to get people involved, and it's a great way to celebrate what we do every day with your coworkers, and you don't have to go anywhere to do it. We do it in our favorite park, and our company has a company event each and every year. We meet at a local park, and we walk, run, jog, whatever it is that the person wants to do, and we do the Global 6K. Of course, we take some pictures. We post that on our favorite social media so the world can see what we're doing. And then we have a meal together. Maybe we have a cake or something like that. But we are enjoying being with each other over a fantastic cause. To find out more about the Global 6K, you can go to scalinguph2o.com/6K. And maybe you're thinking, you know, I work alone or I'm not near the home office, but I still want to do this. Nation, we have a team for you to join. Each and every year, we create Team Scaling Up. We would love for you to sign up on our team. You can do the 6K wherever you reside, and we, of course, will celebrate together. So all of that is at scalinguph2o.com/6K. Another item I will bring up is one of my favorite things to do, and that is the hang. We do the hang every single quarter, and this is where members of the Scaling Up Nation get to meet each other on a Zoom call. But it's not your ordinary Zoom call. It is where we get together and we have fun. We get to meet new people. We even process a couple of issues. We end that with a nice fun game where we're doing something that makes everybody laugh. And that all takes place in 1 hour. So that is April 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It will end promptly at 7. So you can plan before and after that. And Nation, let me tell you, for those of you that have attended before, you know that you meet people within this industry that understand your day-to-day. So now you're expanding your network. You're probably learning some things from these people as you're talking about what everybody does, but it's been amazing to hear how people meet each other, and then a problem will come up at one of their accounts and they don't know how to fix it. They remember, oh, this is a softener issue, and I met somebody that was in the softener industry. They call that person, they help them troubleshoot it, and they met that person from the hang. There's one story about a water softener where somebody was trying to fix this water softener for almost 6 months, Everybody in this company was trying to figure out how to fix it. They could not figure out how to fix it. They weren't able to articulate as well as they should have been able to with the manufacturer, so it didn't get fixed that way. They mentioned the problem on the hang, and the softener professional said, let me ask you a couple questions about that. They got together off the hang and asked a couple questions. I think a couple photos were exchanged. That softener was fixed within a week. The customer was ecstatic, and that happened because somebody extended their network by attending the hang. So you can go to scalinguph2o.com/hang. That's H-A-N-G. scalinguph2o.com/hang. And you can attend April 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I hope to see you there. Now, one of the items that people say they love that we do is we talk about all things water industry, and we like to tell you what's coming up in the industry so you can plan for it. So here are a couple of conferences that you might want to put on your schedule. And Nation, I cannot underscore enough how important it is to attend conferences like this, and some might even be in your backyard. You get to learn things at a level that maybe you don't know them. You might be able to reinforce things that you already know, but guaranteed you will improve your network. Just like we do on the hang, you are going to meet people that understand your day-to-day and can help you with potential issues that you might have in the future. So the first one is the 2024 Design Build for Water and Wastewater Conference. This is taking place April 15th through 17th in Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Duke Energy Convention Center. So if you are in the water wastewater sector and you want to learn more about this, this is for both owners and practitioners and all people involved in water and wastewater. We're going to have information about this show on our events page. Another one you might want to put on your schedule is the 2024 EWTS Emerging Water Technology Symposium. This is taking place May 14th through 15th in Paradise Valley, Arizona. This is co-hosted by the American Society of Plumbing Engineers and the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Officials, IAPMO, who has been a great organization to partner with on the Scaling Up H2O podcast. So this is the eighth time this conference has been held, and it is a way for you to learn more about plumbing safety, water distribution, water efficiency, and all things the like. We're going to have all of that information on our events page. And the last one I'll mention, and we have listeners in Beijing, China. So if you want to go to Beijing, China, or maybe you are already there, the International Water Association Conference on Sustainable Sludge Management. So if you are in the wastewater industry and want to learn all things sludge treatment and disposal, you can go to Beijing, China, May 17th through 20th, and we'll have all of that information on our show events page. Nation, you can go to our show events page anytime by going to scalinguph2o.com, navigating over to our events section, and you'll hear the things that we talk about on the show, and you will see dozens more that we just don't have time to talk about on the show. So my request is you go to scalinguph2o.com, go over to our events section, and figure out what you are going to do this year. Now, while you're there, a favor that you can do for me is if you see something, or rather don't see something, on our calendar, let us know about it. We're trying to make this the most comprehensive resource of all things water so you know what is going on. Once again, scalinguph2o.com, navigate over to our events section. Nation, in addition to all of us becoming greater in our knowledge by going to all of these conventions, we, of course, have an in through our friend James McDonald, where he tries to make us think just a little bit harder about what we do each and every day on his weekly segment called Drop by Drop with James. Ooh.
Welcome to Drop by Drop with James, the podcast segment where we wonder, explore, think about, imagine, and learn industrial water treatment. You guessed it, drop by drop, together. In this week's episode, I offer up another challenge for you.
Challenge accepted.
This week's challenge is to send handwritten notes to those who have helped you. I mean truly handwritten notes. In this digital world we live in, with emails, voicemails, text messages, social media posts, and so forth, actually taking the time and effort to handwrite a sincere note to someone takes on a lot of meaning. I am a note writer. I've handwritten notes to my employees telling them how much I appreciate them. I've handwritten notes to mentors and those who have influenced my professional and personal development over the years. I've handwritten notes to operators for doing a good job or taking the extra time to help me. I've handwritten notes of condolences to those who have lost loved ones, and congratulations to those who have brought new life into the world. I've handwritten notes on Christmas cards, so it's more than just a pretty card with a signature. I once had a customer pull me into his office and gesture at all the tins and boxes of cookies and treats he had been sent at Christmas from various vendors. He sincerely told me that all of that didn't mean as much to him as my handwritten Christmas card hanging on his wall. I was once on assignment in Puerto Rico for 3 months and sent a handwritten postcard back to one of my customers. That postcard hung on their bulletin board above their testing area for 15 years. Even better, I've gotten handwritten notes back. I still have many of them because they remind me of that person, that event, those times, and all of the above. You never know when your kind, sincere words may be just what that person needs to get through that particular day or week. Words mean things. Actions mean things. Handwriting a note to those who have mattered to you combines both words and actions. I'm James McDonald, and I want to encourage you to be like water by forming bonds with those around you, dissolving new knowledge, and making worthy ripples, drop by drop.
I absolutely love this challenge. James has done this challenge a couple of times. I think it's one of my favorite ones that he does. Send a handwritten note to someone who has helped you. The handwritten note is something that I think is undervalued. People will send off an email or send a text, and there is just something. When you go to the mailbox and you see a handwritten, hand-addressed envelope, and you open it up, and somebody has put pen to paper and written you a note about something you did for them and how they are gracious for that. Nation, I think I have kept every single one of those notes like that. In fact, I've read several of them that people have sent to me about something that I helped them with on this podcast. Nation, that is one of the best things you can do to say thank you. And I hope everybody sends at least one handwritten note. And I'm sure there's some people saying out there, oh, a text is just the same thing. Trust me, it is not. And I have a drawer full. I have a special box I keep them in of handwritten thank you notes because they do mean so much more than just a text. Nation, water touches everything, everybody. It can bring us together. It can tear us apart. The Scaling Up H2O podcast is all about sharing knowledge, but it's also about a community that's built around water. When we work, learn, and grow as a community, amazing things can happen. And Nation, that is the perfect setup for our next guest. My lab partner today is Dr. Professor Dragan Savic. Dragan, welcome to the Scaling Up H2O podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
I have just been fascinating doing research for this interview. You've had an amazing career and such an impact on the water industry. I'm super excited to talk to you more about it. But before we do, would you mind introducing yourself to the Scaling Up Nation?
Thank you. My name is Dragan Savic. I'm a civil engineer by training, by background. I worked both in practice, as a consultant for the universities And currently, I'm the CEO of KWR Water Research Institute in the Netherlands, which is Water Utilities Collective Research Agency in the Netherlands. We also have a water company from Belgium, from Flanders.
So when you were figuring out what you wanted to do with your life, how did you end up deciding on water?
Ooh, how much time do we have? I was very much interested in civil engineering. I have to say, at that time, at the age of 18, I didn't know all the specialties you can take. You know, apart from structural engineering, you can go into transport, you can go into water engineering. But throughout the undergraduate education, I really started to love water and water-related subjects. And that stayed with me until today.
Now, you mentioned the KWR Water Research Institute. Can you tell us about that institution?
Well, we are a non-for-profit research institute. We are a knowledge institute, generating knowledge and working for the benefit of the water sector and the society. As I say, we work with 11 water utilities in the Netherlands and Flanders, but we work much beyond that group because we now have social scientists, we have water treatment, asset management, water infrastructure. So we support the entire water cycle, although we focus a little bit more on the urban water cycle because in this day and age, we have more people living in cities than outside.
The term that you are a professor of is hydroinformatics. Can you tell us what that means?
Yes, it probably means different things to different people. But if you look into various informatics kind of application areas, you must have heard of bioinformatics and few others. And in the water sector, informatics is, or the name, the moniker, hydroinformatics has been invented by Professor Mike Abbott, late Professor Mike Abbott, who used to teach at IHE Delft in the Netherlands. And in the early 90s, he came up with a term, and it actually, for quite a lot of people, it is a synonym for ICT technology applications in the water sector. For me, it's more than that, really. For me, it's kind of management philosophy that is being enabled by the technology, not the technology itself. And I think Professor Abbott subscribed to that because he was calling it socio-technology, you know, something that is applied in a society and it has that human-computer interaction to help better manage water resources.
So something that I learned doing research for this interview, you've done a fantastic job of bringing so many different sectors together within the water industry. And to name a few, there's computer science, environmental science, the historical information that we have from running water facilities. I'm curious, when you do all of that, how do you start? How do you bring all these separate ideas and get them to start working in the water industry?
Well, it didn't start that complicated. We started with the baby steps first and, you know, worked with a group of computer scientists, learned ourselves. Water engineers had to learn a bit more on computer science. Computer scientists had to be trained in the water at the University of Exeter in the UK. We also managed to get the funding to run a doctoral center. So for training over 80, I think, PhD students who were trained on that boundary between water and computer science so that they can competently apply and develop some of those AI tools and computer science tools and apply them to a concrete challenge in the water industry.
Well, you just brought up AI, and AI, of course, is sweeping every industry. You can't buy a feed pump without having an option for AI, which is just fantastic because now it can actually make decisions. So you don't have to be on site every time something needs to be changed. What are some of the things that you're doing with artificial intelligence in the water sector?
Well, there are quite a lot of people working in this sector and trying to apply AI. what I've been doing for over 30 years now was looking into numerical optimization and using AI tools like evolutionary computing, genetic algorithms, and such. And those applications in real, kind of for real challenges in the water sector. For example, master design of water distribution systems, where you have to plan for years ahead. And, you know, you don't know what the demand is going to be. So how do you deal with that type of uncertainty? But the municipality needs to know what the plan is going to be over the next 20, 30, 50 years. So I'm currently working on a project with three international partners. It's called Water Futures. And we're looking into how deep uncertainty, like what is climate change going to bring us in terms of demand, in terms of changes in temperatures, changes in precipitation, and also how can we design something that is flexible enough so it can be adapted to whatever future happens, but also something that is cost efficient and also robust to deal with small changes, you know, everyday changes, temperature changes during the day or during the week and so on. So we are working with something that is quite interesting. And then we are using artificial intelligence tools there. So we are borrowing from computer science in order to be better prepared for that flexibility. So, for example, we are using something called reinforcement learning, which is one of those AI techniques that allow the dynamic adaptation to changing environment.
Would you say that until recently, a lot of the data we had was really going unused as far as how do we improve all things water?
Well, I would say that until recently, we've collected data. Previously, it was in analog format, so it was on a piece of paper somewhere stored. And only the specialists, only those that knew the data existed somewhere could access it. With digitalization, that is becoming more kind of democratic. Within organization, more people can access data. So first of all, we had to go through digitalization of the data, you know, collect the data in digital format, but also try to get some of that historical data into a digital format so that then it can be made available to larger number of people. And also people who may not had the knowledge of the existence of the data, but have the ability, have the technology, have the expertise to use data in a much better way.
The data that's collected, is it more localized or more global? Who can get access to it? So if somebody's working at a plant here in Atlanta, Georgia, can they get access to the data that you have where you are?
Normally, no. That's the key issue. I'm talking more about the situation when within the same organizations, you would have silos of data. And I'll give you an example. You think about water supply distribution system, from the intake to the treatment to the distribution, and you would have people who only work with the treatment. So that data is stored on a local machine or a network, but it's accessible and understandable only to those people. Then you have the people within distribution system who are dealing with, say, leakage, with losses, and they have their own data. Then you would have people who deal with water quality, and so on and so on. And those silos existed for a long time because of the nature of the data, because of the nature of the business itself. But now with the utilities going for platforms, data platforms, which will host all of the data, that availability is much better. And you avoid duplication, doing the same work or collecting the same data. So you get cost efficiency on one side and also the ability to analyze and utilize more of that data.
Unfortunately, whenever we try to make things better, there are always people out there that try to create chaos. So security and hacking is an issue. How is that being dealt with? And what's at stake if somebody maybe does do something sinister with this information?
Oh, we know that some people have tried and have done some damage to water systems in the past. But I think the industry has wisened up to that and things have changed, you know, not leaving 000 as the PIN code and a few other things. But yes, the industry is very conscious of the possibilities. And I think each and every utility, water utility nowadays, has a cybersecurity setup. What we do and that's mostly within the IT kind of departments. But what we water engineers are doing is that we are assessing what are the potential consequences to our systems if something goes wrong. Cyber security wise. So there was a project that KWR was involved that was called Stop It, which was working on assessing various scenarios and see what are our physical infrastructure, not the cyber infrastructure, but physical infrastructure that is susceptible to those challenges if something goes wrong with cyber infrastructure. So I think the IT departments are very well dealing with the external threats, but we are dealing more with kind of what happens to our system if something goes wrong.
I can't think of a better name than Stop It. That's a very well-named program.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, you've had a lot of time in the water industry. What is one of the major breakthroughs that you've seen in your career?
Well, there are quite a few, but I can tell you, for example, that taking asset management in water infrastructure to a professional level, asset planning, maintenance, long-term planning and everything, that was one of the key issues. And that area has benefited quite a lot from the development of digital technologies because, you know, we're talking about hundreds and thousands of miles and kilometers of networks managed by a single utility or several smaller utilities. And to do that, to try and manage that just on paper, with a pen and paper, is not possible anymore. And that has happened over the last 20, 30 years. Also, leakage management has benefited quite a lot from new technologies, not just, you know, digital, but also physical gadgets, widgets being developed and implemented in that area. Energy management in the water sector has also improved over the years, particularly when we had those spikes with energy costs going up very quickly, and that really puts the pressure on the utility. Yeah, I think water quality was always high on the agenda, and I have to say it's been one of the first kind of issues that utilities deal with when they are in operation.
KWR puts a very strong emphasis on water and the circular economy. Can you tell the Scaling Up Nation a bit about that?
Yes, I think we generally, modern humans, I would say, we think linearly these days. We kind of buy something, use it, and then dispose of it without thinking what happens to it. And I think that attitude is changing. And in the water sector, because water is naturally circular, we work with the same kind of water, same amount of water that's been here for ages. And the problem with that is that if we pollute more of that water, we have less of it to use for our societal needs. So that's where the circularity comes in. We have to do it in a natural way, like it's happening over the millions of years. And one thing that is happening is that water companies have again taken that up. I can tell you, for example, when KWR came up with this idea and we kind of look what are the short-term and long-term goals. And at one point, 5-10 years ago, we were looking into circular economy and there was not much interest from the water sector in it. But today we have a specialist program that they fund to look into it. I can tell you that in the Netherlands, for example, there are no residues from treatment of drinking water. This is not wastewater, but drinking water. Everything is recycled. There is a company that collects that waste from the treatment works and creates it into commercial products, even to the point when one of those products is facial cream that is made using some of those ingredients. So you must have heard about the beer that was made out of wastewater. This is not what we're talking about here. But again, recycled wastewater, recycled used water can also be recycled and used again.
You have an audience in front of you of industrial water treaters. Many are dealing with utility water, cooling towers, boilers, closed loop systems for transporting heat. You've got other people that are dealing with wastewater and making sure we're taking things out of the water before we send it to the next leg. What's the message that you want to send to them?
Well, I think quite a lot of research has been done. My key point here would be partnerships. Recycling or, you know, circular economy cannot be achieved just in one sector or in parts of the sector. So it cannot be just wastewater utilities. For example, when we're talking about cold digestion, that's where you have waste or residues from wastewater treatment or with lots of organic matter. If you bring food waste and then do it in a digester, huge amounts of energy can be generated there, and the solid part of the waste can be minimized or almost eliminated. But then you have to bring water and food industries together. So with those partnerships, we can tackle circular economy in that case.
With everything you know about water, our infrastructure, and all other things, is the outlook positive?
Oh, absolutely. I think I've seen, over the last 30 years, I've seen huge changes in the water sector in embracing circularity more and more. For example, the company that I was telling you about, Aqua Minerals in the Netherlands, with KWR, we are now working in France to create the same structure so they can recycle that material. The same thing is happening in the UK and in Denmark. So it is spreading, I think, quite nicely and healthily.
One of the issues we have in every sector of the water industry is a lot of people are retiring, and we're not necessarily replacing people with the next generation. That is a passion of mine with this podcast. I know you share that passion. What are some things that we can do to help with that? What are some action steps we can take? What should we be doing?
Yes, that's a big thing. And there are several kind of directions or several dimensions that we have to act in. One is also preserving some of that knowledge of the people who may leave the industry. And that's where AI and digitalization can help. But we also have to look into the next generation of water leaders, those who can take the mantle and then take it forward. So that's the educational training bit. And then the worry that AI will kind of get more people out of jobs in the water sector, I have a completely different view. I was looking, for example, in the transportation industry, the situation with the aviation industry and Boeing and introduction of automation. For me, more automation means more training. We need to train people to use these advanced systems. So the jobs will change in terms of the nature, but I think we will need more people, because water is so essential for human survival, but also commerce, industry. We cannot drop the ball.
When I've had the opportunity to interview people on this podcast, many have said that they were introduced to even the possibility of a career in water early on in grade school. What are some things that we can do to help with that?
Well, one thing, as I said at the very beginning, I wasn't aware of the potential kind of professional path in the water sector when I entered university. And that's fairly late to catch somebody and get them enthused about that. So we have to work with the younger generations. And even within organizations like KWR, I pay very much attention to early career colleagues, because those are the ones that will grow through the ranks and become the next experts, professor, or people who are implementing the new scheme. So I think we need to start early. And the problem is with water is that it's ubiquitous, but we feel we are all entitled to it. And also, I think the public knowledge about what goes into bringing that 1 liter of river or groundwater or surface water to your home, clean 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's a manufacturing process. And most of the general public is unaware of it. I have lots of issues with the value and the cost of water. If you ask somebody, is their water bill, if their water bill is too high, they would definitely say, yeah, particularly in the UK. I lived there for over 25 years. And the situation is that a cubic meter of water, which is 1,000 liters, 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter, weighs a ton, brought to your house, no question asked, cost £2, you know, maybe that's $2.50, $3. You go to a pub, a pint of beer is £4 or £5. But, you know, in people's mind, water is expensive.
Point well taken. And something I'll share with you that I'm really proud of our county. So I'm in Gwinnett County, Georgia. And we have a building called the Environmental and Heritage Center, and it was built just to educate elementary, middle, and high school students. And it's actually about the history of water in this county and how infrastructure eventually came, what they can do to their part. They even have some interactive tools that the students can use. One is on leakage and drips and how important that is for everybody to take responsibility.
Oh, that's really brilliant, because we have similar examples in the Netherlands, because Netherlands has a long coast, which is quite full of dunes, which are good for infiltrating water and then using that water as sources. So those water companies that are along the coast, they also have visitor centers closed because people come to the beach and they use the environment because they need to maintain the environment clean, obviously. So the visitor center, which is near the car park, you know, you come with the kids to the beach, you go through the visitor center and you will see the same thing. You know, what is the leakage? How do we pump water? Do we treat water? And so on. So I think that's a really good way to popularize something about the water cycle and how we prepare it for homesteads.
If you could only get one point across to our listeners today, what would you want that point to be?
Well, I would say compare your utility costs and see what percentage of your total outgoings is water. And I'm sure you'll be convinced that water is not expensive for what you get. Water is health. And we forget that, but we remember that during the COVID pandemic. That was a big thing. Wash your hands, you know, personal hygiene. Even if you were kind of locked into your houses, you know that that water is coming clean and you can use it. So I think that was awakening for quite a few people.
I love that message. One of the ways that many people sell industrial water treatment wares is how much water they're going to save. And 9 times out of 10, they're spending less money on the treatment of that water and they're saving way more on the water. So it's paying for the program. So just making sure we're taking care of this vital resource, and we can do it with all the things that our people are so equipped of helping customers with and talking with other people, sharing their message. I love that final message. If somebody wants to learn more about you and the institutes that you are affiliated with, where should they go?
Well, they can find us on the web, obviously, on the internet. You know, it's www.kwrwater.nl. Very simple. All our emails are public, so I wouldn't mind anybody contacting via email. And I still have my position at the University of Exeter, so my Exeter emails work as well.
We'll make sure to have your contact information on the show notes page. Thank you so much for coming on the Scaling Up H2O podcast and sharing with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
It's all about collaboration. I am so inspired by our guest today, not only for him sharing all the information, but how he collaborates with other people around that information. And through that, he's making all things water better. I love that I was able to be introduced to him because of this podcast. And this podcast, of course, proves that we have a community called the Scaling Up Nation. We are all trying to be better at what we do day to day in a community that understands what we do day to day. So I absolutely love being able to host this podcast to meet so many wonderful people. And I hope our guest today inspired you to even further that collaboration. I remember when I first joined the volunteer leadership of the Association of Water Technologies, I was amazed at how other members would help other members, even members that the members competed against. That was just amazing to me. And that was well over 20 years ago. And that is going strong in that organization and so many other organizations that I am a member of. Nation, as we collaborate with each other, as we talk with each other, as we're friendly with each other, as we challenge each other, our industry gets better. I've seen it for the past 20 years with AWT. I've seen it in so many other organizations. And that's why we're so gung-ho about making sure that you know about all the conferences that are out there, all the different associations out there, and try to encourage you to do things to network with your peers, because magic happens when two or more people get together to talk about water. You know, if they didn't, they would miss out on fully understanding new technologies. Or maybe if we're not collaborating with each other, we wouldn't even know about those technologies. We would miss out on knowing specific items, like maybe new laws that are coming to our area and how to work within the confines of those laws. There's just so many things that we have to know within this industry. It is impossible to know it all. It is impossible to do it alone. And it is imperative that we work as a community, we collaborate with each other, and we support each other. That's why I just love James's challenge for us today, where we are to handwrite a note to someone or a few someones that have helped us. Nation, I can tell you that every single note that I wrote today were all people that I met as a result of being a volunteer leader in the Association of Water Technologies. These are people that ultimately became my mentors, people that gave me so much more than I had any right to ever ask for, and people that made me the water treater that I am today. Nation, we cannot do this job on our own. We definitely cannot aspire to the levels that we want to on our own. And it's through us helping each other that we get there. It's through us helping each other that we make what we started with better throughout our entire career. So I really want you to take a moment and embrace that you are in the most wonderful industry on the planet. As James challenged us to do, take a moment, handwrite that note to someone that has inspired you. I promise that is going to inspire them to do even more. And remember that we are a community of industrial water treaters. We are the Scaling Up Nation, a nation that I could not be prouder of. Nation, I can't wait to talk with you next week on a brand new episode. I can't wait to hear about your letter experience. I can't wait to hear all the things that you've learned within this next week. And I will talk with you next Friday. Have a great week, folks.